Morning. It is 8:05 on Tuesday, April 3rd. We are in room 124 in Juneau, Alaska, and this is the Community and Regional Affairs meeting. We're taking up two bills this morning. HB 212 that may move from committee this morning, and HB 222 that we don't expect to move from committee. Committee members have asked me to hold on to the bill that they have some other questions of the sponsor, and they need to do a little bit of additional research. So I do plan on, if the committee is so inclined, to move 212, but we'll be holding 222. For the record, joining us this morning is Representative Kurt Olson, co-chair Representative Gabriel Ledoux, Representative Mark Newman, Representative Nancy Dahl, and Representative Sharon Sisna, and myself, co-chair Representative Anna Fairclough. Thanks for joining us this morning. Before us is HB 212. Does committee members have any questions before we go to public testimony? Seeing no questions, do we have the sponsor here?
Just as a subordinate.
Representatives could not do what they do without excellent staff to support us. I don't know about subordinate at all.
That'll just make my Monday. Thank you, Chair. For the record, my name is Ben Mulligan, staff to Representative Stoltz.
Thank you, Ben. For the record, we've been joined by Representative Woody Salmon. Thank you, Ben. Please continue.
House Bill 212 is a land conveyance bill from the railroad to Oklutna, Inc. In order for a land transfer to happen, the railroad has to come to before the legislature and ask its approval to transfer the land. The land that's being transferred is known as the Oklutna Quarry. It's a 48-acre parcel over Chugach Birchwood area. Before the bill was even introduced, the railroad, Oklutna Inc., and the native village of Oklutna all got together and worked out the logistics of what was going to happen with this parcel of land and signed a memorandum of understanding. So in coming for you, it's just, you know, a formality of that everyone is good with the deal that has been worked out. The quarry will have what has already been blasted will be taken out, and then it will be conveyed over to Oklutna. If the committee has any questions, we do have the railroad here, and I believe representatives from Oklutna online.
We do. Jim Arneson is online. Jim, are you there?
Did you hear us?
Yes, I can, Mr. Arneson.
Yeah.
I'm not quite ready for public testimony. I just wanted to make sure that if we have questions that you're online and listening. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else in the room with you that you'd like to identify?
Yes, Representative Fairclough, Curtis McQueen here, and I apologize. I'm only going to be here for a few minutes. I'm racing to a long-scheduled other meeting, and then I've been asked to apologize on behalf of Dan Alex of Native Village of Oklutna. Dan called this morning. He is battling pneumonia. He is okay, but he is home. He has made himself available with a phone number if anybody wanted to call him direct, but his intentions were to be here this morning, and he apologizes that he is not.
Mr. McQueen, with the indulgence of the body, I will open public testimony, and if you have any comments for us, we'd take them right now.
Thank you very much, and through the chair, first of all, Bruno would like to thank this committee for taking the time to hear what has been a very important issue, a 30-year-old issue to our corporation, and I will be speaking on behalf of NVE as well. We have worked very close with the Native Village of Oklutna, which is the tribal side of who we are. 30 years ago, a little bit longer than 30 years ago, through ANGSCA, we were promised this land and this quarry, the railroad, and Oklutna and NVE don't have the best of histories in the past of trying to work to some resolution, but we welcomed General Pat Gamble when he came on board. He has been absolutely incredible and proactive with getting this issue resolved. As the statements were made earlier by the representative there, that we did come to an agreement over the last 2 years. We are working very close and very well with the railroad, and we're looking to get this transfer resolved. And I would defer, when you do go back to public comments, that the history and the technical side of how things are put together, Mr. Arneson can speak better to.
Thank you, Mr. McQueen. Is there any questions from committee members? Seeing none, from our side of things, you can go ahead and go to your next meeting. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much.
Are there any questions of the sponsor before we continue public? Seeing none, Ben, thank you. I believe we have people online and in the audience. Do we have a representative from the Alaska Railroad here?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Pat Gamble, and I'm the President and CEO of the Alaska Railroad Corporation. I think, and by the way, if there are any legal questions, I believe Phyllis Johnson is also on by phone if we want to get into the technicalities of some of the legal history on this. By way of an opening statement, I appreciate the comments, very kind comments, that were made by Klutna. And depending on how you view the railroad, you know, you can attribute that to altruism or you can attribute it to a business deal. I think it's a little bit of both. We have had not a great history with the Klutna. We have a real rich potential for a future with the Klutna, and that future was never going to materialize unless we got some issues out of the way that were standing in the way and had been standing in the way for a number of years, this being probably the single lightning rod issue. That 48 acres got us into court, the Supreme Court, at least three times, and it's essentially a cultural issue. When I came on board the railroad, it took me a while, but it wasn't until I went to the village and spent the day there and talked to the elders and actually listened to the history, the cultural history of how that real estate, how those geographical or geological formations played in their cultural history, that I realized, you know, this had far deeper and richer meaning to them than it did to the railroad as just simply a quarry. And so it was at that point, I guess I had a bit of an epiphany, and I came back and said, you know, this isn't going to work the way we're doing it. We're going to have to find another solution. And I think a cultural issue requires a cultural solution, and that's kind of the approach that we took. The Railroad Transfer Act, of course, says that we have to get approval from the legislature to transfer land, and that is why we're here. Very simply, that's why we're here. The deal has been worked out, I think, successfully between the two parties. But what I'd like to say is that I think what's really happened here is that we've also managed to establish a relationship. There are other issues that we have that could be, I think, very promising for development for a Klutna and for the railroad who travel through Aklutna's property. There's a considerable future in that particular geographic area, and we're already at work talking about what the possibilities are for development through that area as a result of the goodwill that's been generated by this particular issue here being solved. I think you have quite a bit of background, and as the representative stated, it is in the essence of things, as far as we're concerned, somewhat of a no-brainer, because our intention is, as soon as we get permission, is to pull up the rock and the fines that are on the ground, clean up the property in accordance with the agreement that we've made, possibly adjust the face of the quarry so that the appearance might be improved a little bit from the kind of the raggedy look. Those things are part of the agreement that we've worked out with the Klutna Inc. and with the village. And then we'll back out and pull the track up and leave the property in as good a shape as we can possibly do. And that'll be the end of it. And so we're here today in House Bill 212 to request your approval to make that transfer come true.
Thank you, Mr. Gamble. Do we have questions from committee members? Representative Ledoux.
I don't really have a question, just a comment. I just wanted to tell you how much I appreciate your attitude of actually going out to the village and listening to what people have to say. I represent a number of villages, and too often people try to deal with villages who've actually never visited them. And you did the right thing and you've ended up with the right results.
Well, it was quite an experience for me, and I mean, it made all the difference. It really did. It simply proved that we were never going to further this issue in any productive way, the way we were going, through the courts and so on and so forth, and the federal government was involved, and they were holding back funds, and I mean, it was far and away, it seemed like a bigger deal than it really was. And actually, this does not hurt the railroad. I think it's good value for the state. You know, it's what they deserve. If you read the history, it's actually quite interesting, and we went back and found the original documents of how this transfer occurred in the first place, that the railroad got the land. Not necessarily something any of us would be real proud of back in those days, the way things were done back then. So it's on the altruistic side, aside from getting the rock back for the railroad, which I'm happy about, I like that, but on the altruistic side, it's just the right thing to do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ledoux. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Gavel, thank you for what you're doing there. I like the compromise. Is there any other reclaiming or reclamation that has to be done to the area besides just take the gravel out, the rock that you've blasted?
Not as far as we've agreed between Aklutna and the railroad. Now, if they in turn follow on by doing some things to the property, I'm not aware of what that might be, but in terms of reclamation, to the best of my knowledge, picking up the rock and the facing issue that we talked about is it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Gamble, do you want me to hold technical questions? Because I have some challenging questions on that particular point that I did read in the document. So would you like me to give them to you, or would you like me to hold for someone else?
Why don't you go ahead and give them to me? And if I assume that the challenging or the technical part might be somewhat legal, and we've got Phyllis Johnson on the line to handle that if it is.
She is on the line. I want it on the record that explosive will be able to be used to remove the final amount of materials off the property with a 24-hour notice, it looks like, to the village and approval to do that. Is that correct?
Yes, and that's in the memorandum of agreement that we signed.
Page 2 of 3, I believe, to get anything loose rocks or anything off to leave it appropriately. But when I look at the planning and zoning recommendations, you're going to need a conditional use permit in there. And inside the conditional use from planning and zoning that happened in 2006, let me get the specific date. December 4th, 2006, the planning and zoning said the Alaska Railroad shall seek jurisdiction from the Corps of Engineers and shall seek as necessary clean water authorization from COE and EPA. In addition, the Alaska Railroad shall submit adverse impacts to water quality and habitat planning. And it goes on in this particular document to say that the site will be sodded or hydroseeded to maintain runoff and air quality. That's on page 2 of the document, 4C. And so I just was wondering, that's different than what the memorandum of agreement that you reached with the parties said. And so I'm wondering which is going to be the abiding document.
Well, we've received the conditional use permit to pick the rock up. We've already received that. Now, I'm not familiar with the wording of the document that you just referred to, and maybe we, unless Phyllis, who's online, has some knowledge and would be able to respond to that, I would have to get some answer for the record.
I'll hold, and that's what I want, is for the record, how is the site going to be left, and is the village of Aklutna and Aklutna Incorporated happy with that resolution? Because planning and zoning have an expectation, at least in December of 2006, that you would sod and leave it with some vegetation. And I believe that the Aklutna Village Corporation and Aklutna Incorporated and the Aklutna Village may have a different expectation to want to return that to natural habitat. So I just wanted on the record which way we're going. And then the only other thing inside the document was a disparity between the value of the materials coming off, and I don't think that's substantial as far as doing the right thing or making the decision. But in the sponsor statement, the value is approximately $2 million, but the value, according to the memorandum of understanding, well, related to the transfer on a letter we have inside of our packet, on 12207, the value is at $1 million. So can you just, for the record, tell me which value is the appropriate one to lead with?
Yeah, the $2 million is the appropriate value. The $1 million was the very first look that we took when we just sort of eyeballed the property and looked at the amount of material that was on the ground. And at that time, given the current market rate for those kinds of materials, and there are actually several kinds, the estimate was $1 million. When we actually went in there and got a better reading of what the tonnage was and what the specific materials were, it actually turned out to be considerably more than that.
I appreciate that, and I just wanted a Clutna Village and a Clutna Incorporated to be able to talk to that. That's why I'm not trying to put you on the hot seat. Just want to make sure
understand.
That we have on the record what we're doing and how we want to go forward. Any other questions for committee members? Thank you, Mr. Campbell.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify before this body?
Yes, through the chair, this is Jim Arneson.
Thank you, Jim.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch a little bit on what was talked about, how a Clutna and a native village of a Clutna wish to have their property returned, and as part of the conditional use permit, we spoke in front of the Planning and Zoning Commission, and it's a sensitive issue out there for the villagers and for Clutna Inc., and we've seen a tremendous amount of destruction to that property just from the removal of rock, and we're more interested in just having the destruction stop and having the property returned. And it is barren rock. Nothing is going to grow in its place, and we really don't want to sod and seed it because we don't have any plans for it yet. And if our plans required removal of whatever was replanted there, it'd just be extra work for us. We basically, Clutna Inc. and Native Village of Clutna, just wish to have the property returned as soon as possible, as soon as practicable, and leave it as original as it can be.
Thank you for answering that question, Jim. Do you have other testimony on the whole bill, the entire bill?
Well, probably just a basic, simple understanding of the historical context, like Pat Gamble mentioned. The history goes back a long ways. At one time, a Clutna Reserve had about 390,000 acres. It was reduced to 9,600 and then 1,200 right around the village. And even within that 1,200-acre reserve, other entities were allowed to come in and take various parcels of property away from a Clutna. And it wasn't until ANCSA passed that Clutna was able to regain some of that land, and this is one of the parcels that was talked about in ANCSA and mentioned in the NILCA and later on in the 3E agreement. And because the federal government was using it at the time, it was not available for selection, but they put a special provision into legislation to allow for a future transfer, and that's what we're seeing here today, is a promise being fulfilled from many, many years ago.
Thank you, Jim. Are there any questions from committee members? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Arneson, what is your understanding of what will happen with the rail spur?
Our understanding is exactly what Pat Gamble spoke to, that the railroad would remove the rail spurs as soon as they remove the material that's laying on the ground.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Newman. Thank you for your testimony, Jim. For the committee, we do have Phyllis Johnson from the Alaska Railroad online. Thank you for joining us this morning, Phyllis.
You're welcome, Madam Chairman. I'm available for any questions whatsoever.
Do committee members have any questions? Is there anyone else online who would like to testify on HB 212? It's a transfer of land from the state of Alaska to the village of Clutna. Seeing none, is there anyone here in Juneau that would like to testify? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing on HB 212 is closed. Any comments from committee members? Representative Ledoux.
I think it's a good bill.
Thank you. For the record, as someone who lives in the community, a Clutna Village as well as a Clutna Incorporated has been an outstanding community partner. They donated the land, or they have leased the land for where Chugiak High sits for years for a dollar, and I am chagrined to say I don't even know if they get their dollar per year from the school district. I'm sure that's taken care of in some way, but They have been a wonderful corporate sponsor, and the I'm not sure how deep you got into the material, but there are two knolls that were identifying the fishing site for Aklutna Village, and when men would come home, men or people out hunting, they would identify those knolls and pull into the mouth of the river where Aklutna is at. And it has been an adversarial relationship for many years for the village and with the railroad as we have tried to take Western ways and thinking that the value of a dollar was more important than a piece of property sometimes. And so I really applaud the railroad and taking a different direction and to try to make things right. This does benefit the state of Alaska in allowing us access to material that has been in dispute for many years, and the ability to reduce costs of construction for the railroad or for highway projects to be able to use that material. And I'm looking to the rail to make sure I'm speaking correctly, that it will reduce the costs of future projects as we take those out. And so with that, I would appreciate your support in moving this bill out of committee and on to finance, should you so desire. Representative Ledoux.
I move House Bill number 212, version LS0777/A, with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Representative Sam.
I object.
Would you like to speak to your objection?
No.
Okay.
Representative Olson.
Yes.
Representative Cisna.
Yes.
Representative Salmon.
Yes.
Representative Dahlstrom, not present. Representative Newman.
Yes.
Co-Chair Ledoux.
Yes.
Co-Chair Fairclough.
Yes.
6-0.
Thank you. That does move from committee. We're going to take a pause just for a moment to sign the bill so that we can move it on. And the next item before us is HB 222. And I believe the sponsor is with us, so if you'd join us up front. Documents that we received late last night from the City of Seward, a comment. And there is a new fiscal note that we need to incorporate in the document. Representative Ramirez, when we continue, I'm just wondering which document. We have a CS, and we were wondering if we needed to. 8:30, and before us this morning is HB 222. This is the Community and Regional Affairs meeting. Welcome, Representative Ramirez. I asked you while we were offline for a moment. We have the committee has two versions, the original one that was introduced and a CS that was delivered in the packet. Representative Ledoux?
Yes, I'd like to move to adopt for purposes of discussion the CS for House Bill number 222, version number LS0782/E, Bullock 32807.
Thank you, Representative Ledoux. Representative Ramirez.
Good morning, Chair Faircloth, Chair Ledoux, and members of Community Regional Affairs. It's a pleasure to be before you. Presenting with me today will be Jane Pearson, who's done extensive work on House Bill 222, particularly the legal dynamics that relate to history on head taxes that date back to 1877, I believe. I'd like to go through the changes in the CS before you just briefly so that we're all on the same page. There are only two. On page one, line seven, we cap the amount that can be collected at $10 per port community in order to avoid any predatory communities with this bill that could go in and try and snatch the whole amount. Secondly, on page one, line 12, we add the word fee after the word tax in the definition of passenger tax. And that is the entirety of the changes that we made in the CS, just for the benefit of the committee. Let me share with you first how we came to this formula that comprises House Bill 222. I caught a lot of heat in the interior for voting against a fish license fee increase a couple of years ago that increased the cost of fishing license fee from $15 to $24, which was the vehicle that was used to be able to create a $78 million bond to create a fish hatchery in Anchorage and Fairbanks. And in that particular case, I didn't think that Alaskans should be taxed in order to recreate in the state of Alaska, and so I was opposed to that. In this instance, House Bill 222 addresses the cruise ship head tax, which largely is an expense that is not going to be borne by Alaskans, but by those that are visiting Alaska. And that battle has been waged, and it has been won by those that think that cruise ship passengers visiting the state should pay a fee, and that is in the books. And the concern that I have now is I'm not a great fan of litigation. I'm not interested in the state litigating the oil and gas industry, nor am I interested in seeing litigation between the state of Alaska and the cruise ship industry. My belief is that we've seen significant growth year over year, compounded growth in the cruise ship industry and the hospitality industry and everything that comes with that 40,000 jobs, multi-billion dollar industry. I have talked extensively with Joyce Anderson in Ethics to make sure, just to speak to concerns that you may have about me as a bill sponsor very briefly. We've talked about the nature of a close economic association. Since I do not benefit exclusively as a member of the hospitality industry and as a citizen legislator, since I am speaking for a broad industry that comprises, I think, 40,000 jobs in the state of Alaska, and it's a tremendous multi-billion dollar industry that has enjoyed a compounded growth rate for many, many years, but perhaps with the possible exception of the year 2002, which was due to post 9/11. The concern that I have, if litigation ensues between the cruise ship industry and the state of Alaska over the disposition of the cruise ship head tax, is that we will see a lessening of that compounded growth, which is, say, it's 3 to 5% right now. If we see static growth, if we see zero growth, I don't know that we will ever pick that up in the ensuing years. And so I'm interested in legislation that will move that forward by constructively addressing the cruise ship head tax in a manner that lessens the likelihood of litigation between the state of Alaska and the cruise ship head tax. And I see that Chair Ledoux has a question, so I'll pause here, and then I'd like to get into the specifics of the premise of House Bill 222.
Thank you, Representative Kramer. Representative Ledoux.
Yeah, I'm just sort of curious as to how this bill is going to guarantee that there's not going to be any litigation about this. There seem to be a number of issues that the cruise ship industry has about the initiative. What makes you think that if this bill is passed, there's not going to be any litigation? Is there going to be somebody from the cruise ship industry here who will testify that if this bill passes, that they're unlikely to litigate the cruise ship tax?
Through the chair, Chair Ledoux, I think time will tell, but I think that it's valuable for us to have a constructive dialogue about this issue. I don't have the expectation that House Bill 222 is going to pass from committee today. So I think that at this point we're really just gathering information on the subject so that the Committee of Community and Regional Affairs can make an informed decision as you hear from experts and those that are involved with this case. My interest in this, it really stems from my capacity as the resource chair last year when we talked about the corrosion lines that had shut down half of the North Slope. And there was an issue of, will we ever get that oil, or is it just going to become the last barrel of oil in that field, the oil that was lost over that few months period? And so my interest is if we have an industry that's growing by 5% a year, and that growth rate is stalled for a number of years because we have the state and a very vibrant renewable industry that are at loggerheads, will we lose that compounded growth rate over some years to come? And we will never recapture it. And so that is my concern. And if I may, the mechanism for facilitating the $78 million in revenue bonds for the fish hatchery in Anchorage and Fairbanks was born out of an increase in the fishing license fees from $15 to $24. And I think there were about 800,000 fishing license fees sold across the state of Alaska. And with that, we were able to bond $78 million, as I say, for the two fish hatcheries. Presently, there are local cruise ship head taxes that are collected. Juneau has a head tax. Ketchikan has a head tax. Other communities have considered it, some, and some have declined because they want the business of the cruise ships. Now the people of Alaska have voted by significant numbers to put a $50 head tax on the state of Alaska. And so the issue arises, what can it be used for? There are $4 is set aside for the Ocean Ranger program. The other $46 is part of the head tax. And a quarter of that has been put into what is called the Regional Impact Fund, which would presumably go to communities across the state, and I question the legality of that. The other $35 is a head tax that is, I'm unclear on what we're going to do with it. The Department of Revenue, in their fiscal note, has been very vigorous, it appears, in suggesting that they can do with it as they choose, and I disagree with that assessment. And I'd like to read to you some bullet points from House Bill 222, and then I want to share with you a summary of the legal opinion that our office has developed. There have been numerous legal opinions which have been provided in your packet. They show that under the U.S. Constitution and federal law, that revenues collected from the cruise ship initiative head taxes can only be used to pay the cost of a service to the vessel or watercraft. This is much like fees charged to aircraft passengers, which can only be used to service the aircraft at airport facilities. Or else, in Fairbanks, we would be harvesting airport facilities to put in playgrounds, or to build roads, or fill potholes, or buy emergency service vehicles, many of the needs that we have in the Fairbanks North Star Borough. It therefore follows that the $46 passenger head tax collected on the cruise ship passengers can only be spent at the ports of call at which the vessels stop. Now, we certainly are clear on the $35 of the head tax. The head tax can be broken into three pieces. The $4 for the Ocean Ranger program, that leaves $46, a quarter of which is supposed to be collected for the Regional Impact Fund, which to Chair Ledoux, I think that $11 in particular is just kind of hangs out there. The other $35 is presumably meant to be used for the port facilities. Presently, there is, in addition to the state head tax, there are local head taxes that are collected. But if the community of Juneau collects $5 times 800,000 passengers or 1 million passengers, they only can use that money incrementally, and they don't have the mechanism to be able to bond large, magnificent projects. And what we try to do in House Bill 222 is to have the local communities surrender their local head tax in the manner that they are able to continue to collect a local head tax, but they collect it as a credit against the state head tax, and then through the bonding department of the state of Alaska Department of Revenue, Devin Mitchell, I think, is the gentleman, they could bond huge projects into the state of Alaska and really make our port communities some of the most spectacular on the western coast of the United States, and really enhance port communities by following the federal law. Congressman Don Young, who is in the building today, and I would encourage members to ask him about the legislation that he and members of Congress passed in the year 2000.
Representative Ledoux has a question.
Certainly.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, maybe I'm just missing something in this, but I don't see anything in this bill which talks about bonding or anything like that. Where is it?
It is the total amount of credits may, it's on page 1, line 10. I think, is that correct? It begins on line 10. The total amount of the credits may not exceed the amount of the tax levy. In this section, passenger tax means a municipal tax or fee that is imposed on the passenger, the commercial passenger, or the operator of the vessel. And on line 13, where it says, and is calculated by reference to the number of passengers or berths on the vessel, we believe that that is the enabling language to allow a local port community to apply to the state for a credit and to enable a bonding mechanism so that remarkable projects can be done in the communities of Ketchikan, Skagway, Whittier, Seward, here in Juneau. I don't know whether you get cruise ships in Kodiak or not, Chair Ledoux, but we believe that this is the enabling language that would allow for a bond.
Representative Ledoux, follow up.
Do you have anybody from legal here to explain that further to, because I guess I'm just not seeing it.
Yes, we can get Mr. Bullock on the line, Chair Ledoux.
Thank you, Representative Ledoux. Representative Newman has a question.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Ramos, I'm equally confused on that issue, but does a community then have the option to opt out on this, or do they have to do this to build a big, fabulous thing, or can they collect this as a maintenance that they have ongoing projects in their port?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, a community could choose or not choose to do it. But once the project was designed by the local governing body and they sought assistance from the state of Alaska, then they would have an obligation. Those fees would be pledged. Presumably much like the fishing license fees are pledged for the next 20 years to service the $78 million bond, but a community could choose not to do a project, though I will tell you that the mayors of Juneau and Ketchikan in particular, who we have contacted, are excited about the prospect of being able to see significant investment into their port facilities.
Representative Newman, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Ramos, lots of communities are affected by tourists through their community. We have, I believe, over 4,000 people come through my district, or 4 million, I mean, every year, traveling through there. So our roads are affected, our ambulances, our hospitals, emergency service, everything is affected by that. So now does this bill say that the first five communities are going to be able to get that money, or is it spread throughout the state? You know, generally, monies that come into the state go into the general fund and distributed from there. And if we could get a little more clarity on dedicated funds on this, I'd appreciate it.
Yes. Through the chair, Representative Newman, thank you for your question. Many hundreds of thousands of tourists go through our community, but because we're not a port community, we don't believe that it is legal under federal law, and state law must conform to federal law, whether it's passed by initiative or whether it's passed by statute here by the legislature. We must conform to federal law, and we believe that using the passenger head tax for purposes other than servicing port communities and where vessels come in is a violation of 33 U.S.C. Section 5, which prohibits taxes or fees on vessels operating in navigable waters or their passengers, except in narrowly tailored circumstances that enhance the safety and efficiency of interstate commerce. The passenger tax imposed by the initiative does not come close to satisfying the test for a proper fee under U.S. Section 33, or 33 U.S.C. Section 5. To summarize Don Bullock's January 26, 2007 memorandum to Representative Mike Hawker, and we are making an effort to get Mr. Bullock on the phone now, the use of money from the tax in an area in which the vessel carrying taxable passengers does not operate may be disallowed under 33 Section 5, unless the money is used, in quotes, solely to pay the cost of a service to the vessel or watercraft. And other than the riverboat discovery in Fairbanks, we don't have much large watercraft, and I've been through your district and don't know that much large watercraft is in that district either, through the chair, Representative Newman. State-imposed taxes related to the operation of vessels or other watercraft are generally prohibited under 33 U.S.C. Subsection B, number 2, with limited exceptions. These exceptions are as follows. Reasonable fees charged on a fair and equitable basis that are used solely to pay the cost of a service to the vessel or watercraft. That's A. B is enhance the safety and efficiency of interstate and foreign commerce. And C, do not impose more than a small burden on interstate or foreign commerce. By using the word and in between B and C, the statutory meaning is conjunctive, connective, or additive, meaning that all three premises must apply for this exception to apply. Therefore, to qualify under as an exemption under paragraph subsection B 2 to the general prohibition, the purpose of the appropriation must meet all three criteria, and we don't think that motor coaches coming north to Denali and up to Fairbanks or rail qualifies. Mr. Bullock's opinion concludes by stating there is a possibility that a court may not consider the state tax at a rate of $46 a passenger per voyage a fee when interpreting 33. I'm going to get you a copy of this so that you guys have a copy of this. In which case, an exemption under those paragraphs would not apply. Secondly, we believe that using this $46 in head tax to go to other communities that don't see vessel traffic violates the tonnage clause of the U.S. Constitution, which the Supreme Court has interpreted to prohibit any taxes or fees on vessels in interstate commerce except those directly related to services provided to those vessels.
Representative Ramos.
Yes, ma'am.
Representative Newman has a follow-up.
Certainly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Ramos, I've read Mr. Bullock's opinion. I've read the legal summaries. I've read them twice, and at least twice. And my staff has read them. I've got quotations. But, Madam Chair, can we hear somebody? Are we going to be hearing somebody who's on the other side of this, or how those funds would be done?
As soon as the committee lets Representative Ramos finish his sponsor statement, we'll be moving into public hearing.
Let's go. Thank you, Madam.
Representative Olson has a question, followed by Representative Ledoux.
My question's been answered.
Thank you, sir. Representative Ledoux.
I guess I was just going to ask, is there any other way besides giving the cruise ships a deduction from what, I mean, the way things would work now is if Ketchikan has a head tax of $10 and we've got this cruise ship initiative, as we do, then the head tax is $50 plus Ketchikan's 10. The way this bill is going to work is Ketchikan is that the cruise ship lines will be paying $40 to the state and $10 to Ketchikan, right? Am I correct?
That's through the chair. That's not entirely correct, Chair Ledoux.
Could you expand, Representative Ramos?
I certainly can. Thank you, Madam Chair. The tax, first of all, is $4 is an environmental fee, so it's it's $46. Of the $46, if a community like Juneau presently collects a local head tax, they're able to use that increment annually to affect very small projects. A port enhancement is a significant investment by a community. In talking to Mayor Weinstein of Ketchikan, they have recently done a $30 million bond. Do they have a dry dock and a shipbuilding facility where we had an overview in Representative Newman's Economic Development, Trade, and Tourism Committee. If they were to put several million dollars in there, they can make small incremental changes. If they had the ability to bond $100 million for a shipbuilding facility, they could do some extraordinary things and actually add jobs. If the local community, as I understand it, Chair Ledoux, that the local community does not have the ability to take an annual locally collected head tax and apply it toward a large bonding capacity. So were they to collect it locally and then take it as a credit against the state head tax, it would give them the ability through the state of Alaska to bond a $70 million project or a $100 million project for a really extravagant, magnificent port facility improvement. And we think that that would be a very remarkable way to handle the cruise ship head tax. Otherwise, what is the state's plan to do with money that must be dedicated to port and vessel where vessels dock and port facility enhancement?
Representative Ledoux, follow up.
Yeah, why couldn't they just do this with muni bonds? And if we don't, I'm not sure whether our state law allows muni bonds right now, but if it doesn't allow muni bonds, then this is something that we want to see rather than going this way and, in my opinion, kind of tinkering with the initiative so far that it's almost voiding it. Just let the municipalities do muni bonds.
Representative Rammers, could I have a brief response?
Yes, through the chair, Chair Ledoux, it is not my intention to negate the will of the people. That is my response.
Thank
we
you.
We intend to honor the will of the people. We want to do this in a manner that's legal under federal law, and we want to do it in a way that is constructive for the communities that are impacted by port ships. Federal law is the federal law. If we're going to go down the road of litigation between the cruise ship industry and the state of Alaska, it's going to be the workforce that suffers. It's going to be all the communities that suffer from inhibited growth in an otherwise vibrant industry.
Representative Rammers, just for the record, for the committee's edification, Joanna Bales is online from the Department of Revenue to answer questions. Don Bullock has joined us from the legal department for questions, and so has Mike Black, the Director of Community Advocacy. We do have many members or several members of the public online that would like to testify on this issue. Representative Rammers, could you conclude your sponsor statement remarks within 5 minutes so that we can move on?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the patience of the committee, and thank you all for your questions. They've been very constructive. It would be nice to think that we could use these funds as we see fit, but we have to fit under the umbrella of federal law. House Bill 222 addresses how the passenger excise tax can be spread as a tax credit amongst municipalities that serve as ports of call to the cruise ship industry. It allows a municipality that is a port of call to have a guaranteed income source, which bond buyers in turn would see as stable and trustful. House Bill 222 would ensure that a municipality that is one of the first five ports of call for the vessel would be entitled to a credit against the tax equal to the lesser of $10 or the actual amount of a passenger tax paid to each municipality. This formula is effective because the average number of ports at which each vessel stops is 3.5. There are a variety of different tour patterns, so different cruise ships stop at different ports of call, and so a variety of communities would be able to participate in this. The provisions of House Bill 222 structure a predictable and stable revenue flow, making financing of significant port improvement projects a reality. House Bill 222 will guarantee a healthy cruise industry and benefit the state of Alaska in a legal manner, thereby reducing the chances of litigation, which otherwise appear inevitable to me. For these reasons, I ask for your support on House Bill 222. And just finally, in summary, if you will, as we talk to Mr. Bullock, look at this summary of legal opinions. We have listed here three reasons that we think that the head tax being applied in a broad manner is illegal. We don't want to see this turn into another Amaretta Hess. We don't want to see this turn into a very ripe piece of low-hanging fruit that's available for an attorney to take a class action lawsuit. We think that the $50 for the head tax is A-OK. We just have to make sure that that we take its application and that we handle it productively and constructively. $4 of it goes for environmental impact for an Ocean Ranger program. The other $46, we have to handle it responsibly and determine as a responsible body how we're going to address this $46. But to think that we can take it willy-nilly up and down the highways of the state of Alaska flies in the face of federal law, and we are inviting litigation and paralysis on the second most vibrant industry in the state of Alaska, and the only industry that we have that is completely renewable, other than seafood and timber and things that take. Once you see Denali, you don't take anything away from it. As you see these port communities, you don't take anything away from it. It's there tomorrow when the sun comes up. We think that somebody needs to be constructive in proposing an application that will make peace between the state of Alaska and the cruise ship industry, and take the $50 head tax and use it wisely and constructively here in the port communities. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd be happy
to
answer any other questions.
Are there any further questions of the sponsor at this time? Representative Ramirez, will you stay with us, or will you have
some? Yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much. Just a direction. I'd like direction from the committee. We do have Don Bullock, who's joined us at the request of the sponsor. Would you like him to lay the framework of his opinion, or can we move to public testimony? It's public testimony.
Madam Chair, I'd like to hear from Mr. Bullock on this a little bit. But I do realize that the public is waited to testify in this, so your call.
The reason I brought it to your attention is that we had called him sort of out of the blue, and he may have other things to his day. So I was trying to be respectful that we had questions that we were firing on to Representative Ramirez that need to be answered for the public.
I think if we got him on the first call, we should take advantage of it, considering that he's wrapped up around his shield.
Thank you very much. I tend to agree with that. Representative Ledoux.
Well, I guess I'm just wondering, Mr. Bullock, is there any way that the munis could bond themselves?
This is Don Bullock, Legislative Legal Services. I don't have particular expertise in bonding. You know, there's the municipalities have the option to bond directly, and they have the option to take advantage of the services of the Municipal Bond Bank Authority. Any bonding issue raises the issue of how secure is the source of funds that will repay the bonds. That's about all I can tell you on that.
Thank you, Representative Blue. Thank you, Mr. Bullock. If I might frame a quick question for you to respond to, Mr. Bullock. There was questions during Representative Ramirez's presentations of HB 222 regarding your legal opinion as to the validity of the initiative that passed Alaska on the cruise ship industry on the head tax. And the committee was asking Representative Ramirez questions on your legal opinion. Is there any way you could give a brief two-minute thumbnail sketch of why you believe or your opinion states that the initiative does not meet federal law?
I'm not familiar with the particular opinion you're asking about. Is there a reference number on it?
So, Madam Chair, it was the letter that he wrote to Mike Hawker, but you have the source document.
Thank you, Representative Ramirez. It's dated January 26, 2007. Subject is 33U.S.C.5B and appropriations. It's your work order number 25-LS0451 to Representative Hawker.
It's going to take me a moment to find it.
Thank you, sir. While you do that, then can we move on to public testimony while you review that?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, sir. The public testimony on HB 222 is now open. We have members joining us from across the state. Tim, is it Borsi, the mayor of Skagway? Are you online?
Yes, it is.
Sir, would you like to speak before the committee this morning?
Yes, thank you, members of House CRA. My name is Tim Borsi. I'm the mayor of the city of Skagway. As you well know, Skagway is a major port of call for the cruise ship industry and has been for many years. We have had a very positive working relationship with the cruise industry over the years, and actually I don't think the community supported the passage of the head tax. However, we are where we are, and I think what's important to understand is that the intent of this was to put some money back into the ports in the areas that were impacted. And we certainly support that concept. You know, we spend a tremendous amount of money in a town of 850 towards cruise ship impacts and port improvements. We are also looking at port projects that are in the many millions of dollars. And if HB 222 is the way the legislature wishes to go, you know, we support the concept. We also like the fact that there is a cap on the amount of money a port could charge, because we think it's important that all the ports that are effective can benefit with this. I think one of the questions that you guys were kicking around is you know, the bonding and why can't the munis bond and that sort of thing. And I guess what I would say is the city of Skagway doesn't actually charge a port fee at this time. If we were to go, say, bond a multi-million dollar port project, we wouldn't have the resources at the city of Skagway. We could go to the bond bank and go, well, there's the cruise ship tax money that, and it goes into the general fund, and we're going to use that, and the bond bank's going to tell us, well, what's the guarantee that the money that's going into the general fund is going to come back to offset the cost of that project? So we certainly, you know, support the concept of the money going back to the ports that are affected. I think you could draw an analogy that it would be similar to the raw fish tax going back to the ports that are affected. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Forsey. Representative Ledoux has a question.
But you could, couldn't you, Tim, enact a tax yourself and use that to as the guarantee source for bonding, couldn't you?
Yes, Representative, we could do that, and you know, it would be something that we would possibly consider if HB 222 moves forward.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ledoux. Representative Newman has a question for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Borsi, what other types of revenues do you have come in? You mentioned the fish tax. I believe that there was some boat harbor loans or grants or funds available. What funds are available to a community like yours to improve your portside facilities?
Representative, through the chair, we don't really receive fish tax money. Skagway is one of those unusual ports in Alaska, and that we are so far up the fjord that the fishery is, we have one fisherman. Basically, the revenue source that we have is sales tax. And that is what we have.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Newman. Thank you for your testimony this morning, Mr. Borsi.
Thank you.
Mr. Cohen, are you online?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Could you identify yourself and your affiliation for the record?
Thank you. My name is Gershon Cohen. I'm one of the sponsors of Alaska's new cruise ship law that was passed in August, and I appreciate this opportunity to speak today, Madam Chairman, on HB 222. Every independent expert working in the cruise industry field interviewed during and after last year's election campaign was of the opinion that a head tax in Alaska would not deter the arrival of cruise passengers to Alaska or change their spending habits. The amount of the tax is so small compared to their other expenditures for the trip that it's simply of no consequence. In fact, in the last 5 years, the industry has steadily raised its own prices by much more than the head tax, in addition to increasing fuel surcharges, and the demand for Alaska cruises remains rock solid. Alaska represents a large percentage of the worldwide cruise market, and the industry has no intention of foregoing that revenue. For that matter, the cruise lines could pay the fee themselves and not burden the passengers if they truly felt it could dampen their enthusiasm for coming to Alaska. The cruise lines are making billions of dollars a year in profits and can certainly afford it. So I don't understand the sponsor's statement about the cruise law either hurting the industry or inspiring them to sue the state. We purposely drafted the head tax portion of the new cruise law with an opt-in approach. Those municipalities that want to receive funding under the new state law must give up the opportunity to charge their own head tax. As you know, very few communities have had the political clout to independently charge a head tax. When Whittier instituted a $1.50 tax, the industry moved to Seward. When Whittier dropped their tax to woo the ships back 8 years later, half of the ships announced they were leaving Seward overnight. When Haynes instituted a $4 tour tax, the industry refused to allow Haynes tour operators to raise their prices by 4%, which meant that the local operators had to pay the tax out of their own pockets. This was, of course, not the borough's intent, and Haynes rescinded the tax that was intended to pay for tourism infrastructure impacts on the community. If the municipalities that now charge taxes, Juneau and Ketchikan, keep their own taxes, which total approximately $12, the loser under HB 222 is the state of Alaska. Well, let's assume the Department of Revenue adopts regulations resembling the suggestions made in the new law for disbursement of head tax funds. Since no cruise ship visits more than five ports in Alaska on any given cruise, the rebate identified in House Bill 222 will come out of the portion of the tax intended for the state and will also lower the portion of the potential pool of funds that we suggested be set aside for the communities impacted by the industry who do not receive direct visits. On the other hand, let's look at who might benefit from House Bill 222. Let's assume the cruise lines continue to have the passengers pay the tax. The credit identified is supposed to go back to the passengers. How will we know the cruise lines have not simply pocketed nearly 25% of the head taxes charged? One of the major cruise lines was recently caught charging passengers for a tax in the Caribbean that was being rebated by the port. It would seem likely that this will be an administrative nightmare for the state if we intend to verify that the money is in fact going back to the passengers, and would probably require significant staffing increases at the Department of Revenue. Even then, given the financial secrecy under which this industry has operated for so long, thanks to registering their ships in third world countries, who knows what records we would even be allowed to see. So in summary, I honestly cannot understand why this bill has been drafted and sponsored, because it doesn't put Alaska first. It can only reduce the revenue to Alaska approved by the voters, and it has the potential of giving a significant portion of the new tax to the industry that didn't pay it in the first place. And I would respectfully urge you to not move this bill out of committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Representative Ledoux has a question.
Mr. Cohen, I'm just wondering, I've been hearing a lot of testimony today with respect to the alleged constitutional invalidity of the initiative which was passed. And as a lawyer, I know that there are often conflicting legal opinions. So I'm wondering if you know of any legal opinion which would suggest that the tax through the initiative, which is now law, is constitutionally valid.
Thank you for the question, Representative. Well, first of all, let me say I'm not a lawyer, and so I can't give you a legal opinion on this, but I would offer two points. One is that as I read the federal law that's been cited earlier today, it says that in 2A are used solely to pay the cost of a service to the vessel or watercraft. I think that the definition that is the key there is what is considered a service to the vessel. And so in our interpretation, we didn't believe that it would only have to apply to ports of call. As far as a legal opinion goes, when we first brought this measure to the Lieutenant Governor's office for certification, it was reviewed extensively for a period of over 5 months by the State Attorney General. And my understanding is that if there was a reasonable expectation that the measure was going to be found to be inconsistent with other state or with federal laws, it would never have been certified for the ballot. But beyond that, I can't speak to your question. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ledoux. Mr. Bullock, have you had time to review the opinion?
Yes, I have.
That is a question Representative Ledoux just posed. Would you like to speak to that?
Yes. So there's there's two issues that are really brought up under 33 U.S.C. 5B, which is part of the Maritime Transportation Security Act of 2002. The first is the issue of the Federal Supremacy Clause, and certain regulations by the federal government displace or are in place of or superior to state provisions on the same provision. And it sounds like you've been discussing paragraph 2 of 33 U.S.C. 5B, and it says if the cruise ship fits into the exceptions at all that are allowed, the fees have to be used solely to pay the cost of a service to the vessel or watercraft, enhance the safety and efficiency of interstate and foreign commerce, and do not impose more than a small burden on interstate or foreign commerce. So before you get to the uses, there has to be a determination of whether or not there's a small burden on interstate or foreign commerce. If it passes that test, then it has to be used for the two specific purposes, solely to pay the cost of a service to the vessel or watercraft, or enhance the safety and efficiency of interstate and foreign commerce. Now, safety and efficiency could have a broader impact than just the vessel itself. There is a risk if money was not appropriated for these particular purposes, then it would be contrary to 33 U.S.C. 5B. At the same time, the Federal Supremacy Clause may apply. There's an issue as a dedicated fund. If this money can only be used for this purpose, then the issue is raised under Article 9, Section 7 of the Alaska Constitution. That's a prohibition on dedicated funds, but there's an exception for certain federal programs. If it's all right, I'll read you Article 9, Section 7. The proceeds of any state tax, which this is, or license, shall not be dedicated to any special purpose except as provided in Section 15 of the article. And then it says, or when required by the federal government for state participation in federal programs. So you're looking at two different things here. First of all, is the cruise ship tax within the allowable purposes under 33 U.S.C. 5B? Is it imposed at no more than a small burden on interstate or foreign commerce? And finally, if the money can't be used for any other purpose other than that's required by that federal law, does this requirement consider a federal program that the proceeds of any state tax, when required by the federal program for state participation in federal programs, if the fee meets that requirement, that there is some federal program that this money is required, for which this money is required, it may avoid the issue under the Alaska Constitution dedicated funds. I don't know the answer on that. The courts probably may face that at some point, but the risk is there. That's it.
Thank you, Mr. Bullock. Representative Ledoux.
But when you say that the risk is there, I mean, I know it's always kind of hard to pin down a lawyer because we don't really like to get pinned down. But if you had to wager on it, would you say that this had a 50% chance of meeting constitutional muster, a 40% chance, a 60% chance? Where would you be?
I think it's not a matter of percentages, and I am going to have to take the lawyer cop out because part of the issue is raised only when the money would actually be applied, because the test is whether it's actually applied for a purpose that's allowed in the federal statute. And as far as the state constitutional issue, I personally don't know whether there is a federal government program that requires state participation that would make the cruise ship tax allowable under the prohibition against dedicated funds. I mean, that's not a percentage question. Is there a program or not? I don't know. And perhaps one of the people that are waiting to testify could identify such a program.
Follow up, Representative Ledoux.
Don't we all the time around here pass statutes with funding mechanisms, and then we say in the statute, but this isn't a dedicated fund?
We, along with this language that says this is not a dedicated fund, is the language may be appropriated 4, and that takes it out of the dedicated issue. So there's an identity that there's a preference for an appropriation, but it's not binding. The money could be used for anything else, and indeed, sometimes at the end of the session, money is rolled out of accounts that could be appropriated for other reasons, so to fund the budget.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ledoux. Thank you, Mr. Bullock. Are there any other questions for Mr. Bullock? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bullock, during the discussions on the head tax, you know, I heard all the way from people from Whitehorse how they would be affected by a head tax. But now this bill says that the funds collected from that head tax should be used in the ports that they enter, or at least the first five. Is there anything in state law that says that that they have to specifically be used there? I'm a little lost there, because a lot of areas of the state are affected.
Right. I mean, just as the initiative is drafted, it says simply that the first five ports that are visited by a ship that's taxed can receive $5 per passenger per port. Then there's general language that allows for the money that's received from the tax to be appropriated as in areas of the state where it's impacted. And that's part of where the issue under the federal statute applies, as to whether the root uses for which the money is appropriated fits within the requirements.
Thank you, Representative Newman. Thank you, Mr. Bullock.
Thank you,
Madam Chair. Don, are you available to stay online in case we have other questions, or do you need to move on?
I will. If you're rustling a paper, that's all right. I'll be with you.
Well, I keep hearing sirens, and I've heard a cell phone, and for those of you online, the Finance Committee has this wonderful policy of donuts if we hear anything going off. So, you know, just keep that in mind, and maybe everyone should turn off their cell phones, and the rustling of paper we'll try to get over. Next, joining us from Seward is Marvin Yoder. Marvin, are you online this morning?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Chairman and co-chairman, just to give you a few thoughts from Seward. First of all, one of the things, I go back to the statute that's already in place, which is 43.52.230, regarding the disposition of receipts. One of the things that is of interest in that particular legislation or statute is that it is distributing $250 per passenger to the city and $250 to the borough. Since the borough does not have any port powers or any place for cruise ships to land, we doubt that they can actually use those funds, but Seward's amount is reduced without HB 222 passing. Second thing is that it's more of a local control issue, in that if we receive the funds from the state, we apply for them. And one of the issues, and I think it might answer some of the questions regarding the bonding, is that the language again in 43.52.230 says subject to appropriation. So the process seems to be that the money would be collected by the state, Seward would apply for its portion, and then subject to appropriation would receive the funds. That, of course, does cut back on your ability to bond, because it's not a for sure source. It's something that is subject to a yearly appropriation, and one legislature, unless it's without dedication of the funds, one legislature can't bind another. So I think that is kind of where it's going, is that if we enacted our own and received our 5% or our $5 or $10 directly, then it is a guaranteed source and would be available for bond repayment. We are interested in larger projects, which all goes together. And so I think those are the main issues, is that because the original statute is written, says it's subject to appropriation, and because there is the split between the borough and the city, we feel HB 222 allows us to another look at imposing a tax locally that would be a credit against the $50 that the ship passengers pay, and that we can handle it locally.
Thank you, Marvin. Representative Ledoux has a question.
Yes, I'm just wondering, even if this doesn't go into effect, even if HB 222 doesn't become law, what's to prohibit you from right now passing a head tax?
Well, as I understand it, there is nothing that prohibits the City of Seward from doing that. The difference would be that it would be in addition to the $50, is the way I understand it.
Follow-up, Representative Ledoux?
That what would be in addition?
If the City of Seward decided to impose a head tax or a passenger fee on their own without 222 passing, my understanding is that that would be in addition to the $50 head tax imposed by the state.
That follow-up?
Representative Ledoux.
That's correct, but how would Seward be harmed by that?
Probably not. It just appears that there is a head tax been passed. It has the implication to help us prepare for the port, fix up the port better, put money into that. We think that the $50 tax can do all those things as it stands. And the City of Seward, like some of the others, has been reluctant to add anything in addition that would put us over and above the other ports. You heard the testimony already that when ports have done that, they have found a reduction in the cruise ships coming in there. And so by us staying within the bounds of this $50, we probably aren't turning away any passengers.
Thank you. Representative Ledoux has a follow-up.
So it sounds to me like what you're saying is that it's only because of fear of cruise ship boat retaliation that you'd be afraid to initiate a head tax without HB 222 passing? Is that what I'm hearing?
I think that's been the general consensus. I'm a short time here in Seward, and so I can't say what the history has been. I just know that we feel very comfortable working within the $50 umbrella, and we have discussed this at council, and they are anxious to work within that $50 umbrella and work with the state on that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Yoder. For the record, we did receive and distribute a letter from the City of Seward from the Mayor Vanta Sofer, who is wanting to go on the record in support of the intent of HB 222. With that, I have Alan Sorum from Skagway on the line. Thank you for joining us this morning, Alan.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I believe this is Alan Sorum, the city manager in Skagway, and I believe Mayor Morrissey did a good job of explaining our concerns. And like he said, the cap on individual credits at each port is definitely important to us. And I appreciate the chance and just listening in on the testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else online that we don't have recorded here that would like to testify on HB 222?
Yes, Bob Weinstein from Ketchikan.
Thank you, Bob. I'm sorry, your name was on a separate sheet of paper. Your testimony for the record, sir.
Oh, okay, great. Yeah, my name is Bob Weinstein. I'm the mayor of the city of Ketchikan. And just for a little background, I've been mayor since 1997. I was a council member for 6 years prior to that. And my elected service has coincided with the growth of the cruise industry here in Ketchikan. And I think that we have a good working relationship with the industry, both in terms of the city and myself personally. Also in 1997, we lost our largest employer when the Louisiana Pacific pulp mill closed here. And since that time, we have been working very hard to recover, which we've done in part due to the improvements in the tourism sector. We've encouraged investments in fishing as well as tourism and in marine infrastructure, including ports, harbors, and our shipyard. About 6 years ago, the city initiated a long-term port facility development plan. The plan envisions, among other things, making improvements to existing facilities so that we can accommodate the largest known ships likely to be in the Alaska cruise touring trade. As part of that effort, the city received legal advice regarding federal statutory restrictions and constitutional restrictions that apply to the use of marine passenger fees. And I think, as has already been discussed, in 2002, Congress passed Section 445 of the Marine Transportation Security Act, which essentially requires there to be a connection between the fee and the service to the vessel, passengers, and or crew. Conversely, collecting fees for which there is no reasonable relation to the value received by the ship's passengers or crew is precluded. It's my understanding, again, from our legal advice, that that was in part due to an Alaska municipality considering a viewing tax, where a ship simply went by the community, did not stop, and no services were provided to the ship. In essence, our legal advisors have told us that Congress has inserted itself through that act and elsewhere very actively into the question of what fees can be charged and for what purposes they can be used. Ketchikan owns and operates substantial port facilities which provide services to cruise ships, their passengers, and crews. These facilities have become increasingly congested as the cruise tour business has increased since the early 90s. The city has implemented phase one of its plan to expand port facilities directly and improve some of our upland facilities to better provide for the safety of tourists and alleviate the dangerous pedestrian and vehicular crowding that now occurs when vessels are in port. Last summer, city voters approved by a 70% margin a $38 million revenue bond to pay for the port and those related improvements in phase one. The debt service is being repaid through the implementation of a marine passenger fee approved by the city council. The fee for 2007 will be $7 per passenger.
Bob, could you testify to the bill that's before us?
I will. I'm trying to give you some background because some of that answers some of the questions that were
Are you in favor or in opposition to the bill?
I'm speaking in favor of the amendment of the bill. Our financing was obtained through the Alaska Bond Bank. It's my understanding that that's the largest bond issue ever approved by the Alaska Bond Bank. We do not believe their approval would have been forthcoming if instead of a reasonably guaranteed revenue stream, we had to rely on appropriations from the legislature annually. That was confirmed in discussions that city staff had with, first of all, the bond bank's financial advisor yesterday, who told us that under any circumstances he could imagine, the pledge of a borrower to the bond bank secured from ongoing revenues, like a marine passenger fee assessed by a port, is superior to a pledge that's subject to annual appropriation. He noted that, in fact, there have been some fairly high-profile defaults in recent years by issuers in which one governing body opted to not meet obligations that had been entered into by a prior governing body. Consequently, his conclusion was that he would always be more inclined to support a pledge not subject to annual appropriation than he would be to support a pledge subject to the annual appropriation. Shortly thereafter, the executive director of the bond bank informed us that he agreed with that opinion with the caveat that he'd be less concerned if we were talking about a $1 million bond issue. The current arbitrary $5 limit per port for up to five ports as written in the initiative will, from our review of the real ship schedules, direct an average of only $18 of the $50 collected to the communities affected by the cruise ships. That is based on the fact that cruise ships visit an average of about 3.5 ports per cruise, not five ports per cruise. So in my opinion, that is not enough money to meet needs in directly affected communities. Also, in the present formula, none of the state fee goes to the municipalities that operate the ports of Ketchikan and Juneau, as both communities have port fees equal or greater than $5. This further reduces the amount I referenced above, and in part answer to an earlier question, it puts both of these ports at a big competitive disadvantage against other ports because our local fee is now on top of the $50 fee per person. Somebody visiting Ketchikan and Juneau might pay $62 versus $50. So an unintended consequence, I assume, of the initiative is that visitors to our community pay more than visitors to other communities. And I don't think that's appropriate.
Bob, do you have a concluding remark that you'd like the committee to consider in reference to 222 specifically?
I do. We support 222. We think it's appropriate. It's an appropriate amendment. I think it's consistent with the notion that the voters approved a $50 tax on cruise ships, on cruise ship passengers. We believe it's consistent with what we have been advised as federal requirements that marine passenger fees be spent on services related to the vessels, passengers, and crew. We also believe that it will meet the requirements of lenders willing to finance port projects so that marine passenger fees flow to local communities to improve port and related infrastructure so that we can compete on the world market with ports around the world that are also making significant investments. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any questions from committee members? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony this morning.
Thank you.
Is Chip Tama available?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
For the record, my name is Chip Toma from Juneau, and I'm a supporter of the cruise ship initiative. I helped in the campaign. I'm not paid by anyone involved in the initiative, or do I work in the tourism industry or against the tourism industry. In fact, I have been very scrupulous about sending information back to a realtor in Delaware who works with my sisters, and every year the realtor requests new information on the cruise ships and on the packages being offered in Southeast, and they're very thankful for that information. They use that those packages when they travel on the cruise ships up here during the summer. If I may, HB 222 would have a negative impact on the finances of the state of Alaska. It would not help municipalities cope with hosting the 1 million cruise passengers that come to Alaska in a 5-month compressed season. The proposed credit a passenger would receive will never benefit that individual passenger. This is a rebate program that will return directly to the Miami cruise companies. Instead, the initiative is an opt-in program, a choice for local municipalities. In the years ahead, many new ports, such as Cordova, Valdez, possibly Kodiak, possibly other places that want to build and welcome cruise ships into their communities, and those communities with private docks, such as Skagway and Whittier. I think that's something that the Skagway person didn't let you know. White Pass owns that dock. They do charge a head tax. There is a head tax charge in Skagway. But under the initiative, Skagway would be able to enhance that area around the dock and use these types of money that come into it. As the initiative was written, each community has the choice when to opt in or opt out of this local revenue sharing program. They can choose to have the state collect and distribute the tax, or to pay for local improvements with local passenger fees, such as Ketchikan and Juneau are doing right now. And we all agree that the federal law that was passed for security, safety, and efficiency is applicable. Juneau is the template for how this head tax has been used in the state of Alaska, and we've gone to great lengths to be scrupulous in how to apply that. In Mr. Rammers's packet, there are two opinions by the present attorney and the former attorney of Juneau, Mr. Corso and Mr. Hartle. And I think that probably goes to the best explanation of the head tax and how that can be used locally. So I urge you to look at those two opinions. To paraphrase Abraham Lincoln, you can't fool all the people all the time. And 81,000 Alaskans voted correctly on this cruise initiative. They knew what they were voting on, for clean cruise ships and verified clean, for fair taxes that go to infrastructure, and for local consumer protection for passengers, and a level playing field for Alaska businesses that want to do tourism business. HB 222 would repeal basic taxing provisions of the initiative and cause accounting chaos in the collection of fair state taxes. The cruise lines are a multi-billion dollar industry that overwhelms coastal towns throughout Alaska each summer, and it's time for a fair tax regime that provides funds for this huge infrastructure costs that are needed in the years ahead. We envision, Juneau envisions spending $40 million just for security reasons. We have to build two big finger docks that come out of our main dock here to block off any access to cruise ships. $40 million project, and so that's the type of cost that we're looking at in the future. Juneau is planning on bonding for that with its local head tax, but other communities should have the availability of having a state fund contribute to that, so they don't have to go to bonding. You're going to have enough money in the state fund coming in from this initiative that you're going to be able to pay for those projects out of pocket in the appropriation process. In my estimation, the simplest and most courageous action by an Alaska governor was taken by Jay Hammond in defining the ground rules for doing business in Alaska. The industry pays its own way, it will not pollute, and that all industry gets a fair share, pays a fair share of state taxes to accomplish that. That's why, to me, it's deeply offensive that a multi-billion dollar industry that's loosely regulated and poorly controlled sends folks all the way from Miami to Alaska to help repeal state law. It was just enacted by the voters. The ink is not even dry on the initiative results before this all-out repeal has transpired on every aspect of the initiative. I should also point out a couple of things. In the voter pamphlet, which was passed out to every voter in the state back in August of 2006, there's extensive discussion of the taxes on pages 12 and 13, all of page 14, and also on the sponsor and opposing statements that are in the back of the booklet on pages 19 and 20. I can get copies of this available for the committee, and you can look at that. To answer a couple of the sponsor statements, there is not going to be a compounded growth rate in tourism in the cruise ship business in the years ahead. And the reason is because these towns are at maximum capacity. You are coming up against the $1 million mark where we literally cannot fit any more ships into these harbors. Ketchikan is building docks for four Panamax ships. Juneau has docks and is building them for four Panamax ships. That eventually is going to be the maximum capacity with one in the harbor, so five total. So the 15% growth rate that we experienced in years past, because of the large numbers that we're talking, has shrunk down to 10% and 5%. But still, every year, it's the same numbers. That 15% growth rate from 15 years ago is now 5% today. There's still 35,000 to 50,000 more people coming to Alaska every year. It's called a 5% growth rate, but 15 years ago, it was a 15%, and 10 years ago, it was a 10% growth rate. Juneau and Ketchikan, as you do know, bond for these big projects. I think they have the ability to do that. We are the leaders in this type of passenger fee, and I think that they want to continue doing that, obviously from Mr. Weinstein's testimony that that's the case. That's my testimony, Madam Chair, and I sure appreciate your time.
Thank you, sir. Are there questions from committee members? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Toma, you talked a little bit about how Juneau would like to spend these funds. Do you think that the 81,000 people who voted on this initiative thought that all these funds should only go to ports of call, or do you think that they should go into the general fund to be spread evenly amongst all communities?
It was very, very rarely discussed in any of the campaign literature by the opposing side or the supporters. There was some discussion on talk radio in Anchorage that some funds could be available for the Alaska Railroad because of the railroad station and the use of the railroad to haul cruise ship passengers. That was one of the things that was cited. Talkeetna is a possibility because there is a demonstrable use by cruise ship passengers of that area. Those were the two things that were cited, but there was never anything that was fleshed out.
Representative Newman, follow
up. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Toma, do you think that the people who voted on this felt that that money should just go into the general fund to be distributed to help cover costs of schools, roads, all the services of the state, or do you think that the people felt that it should only go to the ports of call?
It was very clear in the initiative that it could only be used for ports of call and for that structure for the cruise ships themselves, the infrastructure. That was made very clear.
Thank you, Representative Newman. Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Chip, I had a question.
Yes.
What were the opinions that you cited?
They're in Mr. Ramirez's packet. They're by Mr. Corso, C-O-R-S-O, and Mr. Hartle, H-A-R-T-L-E, who's the present Juneau attorney. Mr. Corso is the former attorney. Both of them went to great lengths to explain the new federal law and how that would apply to Juneau and how we use the funds.
Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you.
Thank you for testifying.
Madam Chair, one more.
Representative Newman.
So do you support this bill?
No, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Is there anyone here in Juneau that would like to testify on HB 222? Anyone at all? Is there anyone who's joined us online who'd like to testify on HB 222, an act providing for a credit for the payment of certain municipal passenger taxes or fees against the excise tax on travel aboard commercial passenger vessels and providing for an effective date? Anyone at all? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. Any comments from committee members? Representative Newman.
Just briefly, Madam Chair, I'm not very comfortable, I don't think, right now with this bill. Maybe if we hear a little bit more on it, just my comment right now.
I agree with Representative Newman.
For the record, Representative Sisna, thank you.
I'm very uncomfortable with this bill.
Thank you, Representative Wedick.
Same here.
With that, we have no other bills before us this morning, so this committee meeting is adjourned.